Hey everybody, this is Dwayne Johnson, and I'm here to tell you about a new documentary podcast series titled What Really Happened, narrated by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Jenks in coordination with our company, 7 Bucks Productions.
Muhammad Ali saved a man from committing suicide.
I got the whole world where I want him.
In 2007, Britney Spears' life became a train wreck.
Next thing I knew, all her hair was off.
Was Michael Jordan pushed out of basketball because of his gambling problem?
You know, I'm doing fine. I'm strong mentally, I'm strong physically.
Did any of these happen the way we were told? I'm Andrew Jenks, a documentary filmmaker, and along with executive producers Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia, I go on a rogue investigation.
This series will look deep into the unknown sides of historic news stories and then ask, what really happened? Download and listen to the trailer now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and prepare yourself to engage into what really happened.
What's wrong with the Falcons? What's right with the Patriots? We break down a blowout in the Super Bowl rematch. Elsewhere, the Steelers look as good as anyone. Brett Hundley's disappointing debut. The Broncos are falling apart. And those weird Chicago Bears. We're breaking it all down on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through week 7, more carnage, especially a lot of carnage on Sunday night, the Super Bowl rematch. I guess these teams kind of picked up where they left off last February.
They did, and New England's defense got on track, and I'm not at all surprised that they did, maybe to the degree that they did. I don't know if anyone saw them coming in and pretty much dominating what I think is still a good Falcons offense, a struggling Falcons offense right now, but a difficult one to play against. But things are certainly trending up in New England, and I'm going to bring the conversation back every time. I think Tom Brady's playing the best I've ever seen him play.
Yeah. Well, let's officially declare this topic number one.
Number one.
And let's start with Tom Brady. We'll start with the positive. I do want to get to the Falcons, and I want to dissect exactly what is wrong with the Falcons offense so that we can fix it for them and let them rebound their season here. But, Brady's sharp, and I don't know. I mean, did the offense ever really fall off to you? Were you worried about the hits that Brady was taking? I mean, obviously, you know, they're a little more vertical this year than they've been in years past.
Yeah, you do worry about the hits. Sure, you worry about that with any quarterback, and Brady is 40 years old, and that has to enter your mind. Some of that has been because they're more of a vertical offense, so we've always said that New England has a so-so offensive line, but the nature of their system, Brady gets the ball out so quickly that it nullifies a lot of that. Well, that's not the nature of their system anymore. They brought in new personnel in this offseason, and then to fully accentuate that, the football gods removed Julian Edelman from their equation, and now they're really not a quick-strike offense. They're a power-running offense. We see them run with pulling guards a lot. They put Gillisley in behind Mike Devlin at fullback. They ran the ball that way. They throw play action off of that, and then they go deep and they go vertical, and they're connecting on a lot of third down and longs, which is what they did in this game tonight. That's all coming back to the quarterback, Gary. And Brady, he has been hit. He's also hidden a number of potential hits or nullified them with his pocket movement. That, to me, is what stands out. His ability to move within the pocket is the best I've ever seen, not just from anyone in the league, but including from him at any point in his career.
I was going to say, the one like drastic mistake he made, it was the most un-Brady play I can ever remember seeing, was that interception he threw tonight where you know he extended the play, sort of moved right, and then threw back across the field and obviously did not see Robert Alford was waiting there for him. But of course that got nullified by a sort of boneheaded roughing the passer penalty. So when he does make a mistake once every 4 or 5 games, it breaks his way anyway.
Yeah, and the last time he made a mistake was probably on the other Alford interception in the Super Bowl, where Alford switched the man coverage assignment and Brady didn't process that. Brady's not flawless. Let's also keep that in mind. I mean, it's proof that nobody is flawless because he's the best player in the NFL, and you can still find 4 or 5 things a game that he does that are just mistakes, and that's the nature of football.
Well, let's turn it around to the other side of the ball here. Let's talk about the Falcons offense. This is not going well. They went 5+ quarters without scoring points. Nearly shut out tonight. They did get on the board. Of course, they did. You know, they had a short missed field goal. They had a blocked field goal. So it maybe wasn't. I don't know. It's like 6 points is still not very good, but it looks better.
Well, they
than
were
zero.
Moving the ball a little bit. You're saying though, it's not like yes. they were totally shut down. They didn't score. That was some of their special teams, but they don't look like the same unit right now, do they, Gary?
They don't. And I was going to ask you this. This is my impression, and I think this is the kind of thing that I wouldn't even think about if they were, averaging 28 points a game or something like that, even something less than last year, but not as far below last year's bar as they are right now. It just seems like there are no easy throws for Matt Ryan. It seems like it's fewer in-breaking routes, and it's a lot more corner routes and fades and stuff that's sort of more low percentage.
That's probably fair. I mean, off the top of my head, we'd have to get like Pro Football Focus would track that kind of thing, and it'd be interesting to see those numbers. Off the top of my head, I can see that. We saw that in this game tonight. And New England played a lot of two-man coverage, protecting a lead, which is man-to-man across the board, two safeties over the top. And the Falcons see a little more of that than a typical team because that's a natural way to double Julio Jones. And if you're playing two-man, you can double Jones in the slot even, not just when he's out wide and it's kind of a cover two type of look. You can double him however you want. And New England doubled him in a very good, creative, various ways. Mm-hmm. But that's always been true with Julio Jones, and they've always had answers for that. What I'm getting at is for the amount of two-man that we saw, it didn't feel like we saw a whole lot of crossing routes, rub routes, motion, pick concepts, the type of things that naturally beat man coverage. I wonder how much they're motioning, Gary, because I'm tracking it San Francisco stats under Kyle Shanahan, and we're tracking their pre-snap movement, and they motion on there will be games that they'll send someone in motion 70% of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge number, and it creates a lot of matchup elements. It gives your quarterback a lot of information before the snap. I don't know if we're seeing quite as much of that from Atlanta as we would be if Shanahan were still running this offense.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the elephant in the room. Sarkisian, I mean, this is six games into his tenure here at this point, right? Because they had the bye week already. People are calling for his head. I mean, people want him out. People want, I believe our Robert Klemko actually is calling for Raheem Morris to get promoted and Sark to be out at this point. I mean, are we talking about major tweaks here? Are we talking minor tweaks? Are we talking a major overhaul? Do you think it's time to entertain the notion of switching up offensive coordinators?
I can't answer that because these coordinators have so many things, so many variables involved with their job that we're not privy to understanding. And who knows what all's going on or why they do what they do. You have to take a pretty general macro look at them. And to say that a guy should be fired at this point in the season feels a little micro to me. Raheem Morris, keep in mind, he's been around. He's worked on both sides of the ball. He's never been a play caller before, though. And my guess is Dan Quinn would be pretty uncomfortable with that because that's the reason that they didn't want Matt LaFleur, their quarterback coach, who's now the offensive coordinator for the Rams. LaFleur is a rising young coach, and you would think that their QB last year, Matt Ryan, had the MVP season working with LaFleur. They'd moved LaFleur down to the sideline. That really helped the chemistry of the whole offense and with Ryan, and yet that guy didn't get promoted to offensive coordinator from within on the best coached offense maybe we've ever seen. So it's obvious Dan Quinn really values experience, and he wanted Sarkisian, someone that's run an entire team, could run the offense as the de facto offensive head coach. I would be shocked if Quinn were comfortable with Raheem Morris, who's kind of been a utility man coach and probably a good one. I don't think that's the guy that Quinn would want to hand over the plays for.
Yeah, and look, the play that he's just getting destroyed for, and that's the problem when you run a play like this. Anyone watching the game just kind of says, "Oh my God, how did you do that? Was that jet sweep on fourth and goal?" From like the half yard line, and that's the kind of thing that people are going to jump all over, and you know, it's the same thing with Kyle Shanahan didn't run the ball in the Super Bowl enough, and this just sort of played right into that narrative, and it was funny watching, obviously because of the fog they had the lower camera angle for Sunday Night Football,
Your camera angle, Gary, your favorite camera.
My favorite camera angle. And as I was watching from that camera angle, I was kind of like, are they going to sneak Matt Ryan right here? And then you saw Gabriel coming, motioning from the left side to the right, and it was kind of like, oh, no. And, yeah, they gave it to him, and it went 5 yards backwards. And, I don't know, Falcons fandom just exploded at that moment.
Well, and that's, look, if it had worked, then gutsy, unique, yes, creativity, all that kind of thing.
Yep.
New England is tough to run on in that one-yard line. We've talked about that in other big one-yard situations with that defense before, mm-hmm, where a certain coach got criticized for his play calling. By the way, that fog, I just bought a new 70-inch Ultra HD TV, and I have been fiddling with the settings nonstop since Saturday. Like, all right, I got to get the perfect tint, the perfect contrast, everything. Here's the first night game I watched tonight, and the fog sets in. And, of course, I didn't know it was fog for the first 10 or 15 minutes that I was seeing it. And I'm just wondering what the hell's going on with this brand-new, yeah, expensive TV that I've already fallen in love with.
I was going to say, I was hoping that you were going to say you were hoping that you could just see through the fog with this incredible high-definition TV.
Part of me thought that. I thought, you know, shouldn't this thing be able to transcend this? Like, what,
yeah,
like, what is the technology for? It's yep, great. It's fun watching football when it's really big. These are first-world problems, by the way.
Yes, I know. We'll have a fundraiser for fog-cutting technology for our televisions.
Number two.
But for now, we will move on to topic number two. That is Steelers-Bengals. The Steelers look as good as anyone in football right now. If you thought they had offensive problems, you probably don't think that anymore. They were plenty sharp. Lots of Le'Veon Bell today. This defense was absolutely dominant, though. And it was, you know, I don't know about you, Andy. I was kind of curious to see how this Bengals offensive line would hold up. They've been a little bit better the last couple weeks. It was obviously the biggest question mark with this team coming into the year. And, you know, they got destroyed by the Steelers front today.
So here's what we have with the Steelers. They have potentially the best running game in the NFL, because, mm-hmm, when Bell is running well, and we see what he can do, of course, Roosevelt Nix at fullback was a factor in this game. DeCastro's a puller, often those two working together on the strong side at the point of attack. This was an old-school power running game, and it worked extremely well. They counterbalance that with a defense that lines up, plays straight zone coverage extremely fast, and when they need to, they can do a lot schematically, a whole lot schematically, but they haven't needed to lately. Here's what I mean, look at their personnel, Gary, and I know Stephon Tuitt didn't play in this game, but let's count him in there. He'll be back, mm-hmm, soon. Hargrave, I love as an athlete. Craig Hayward has blossomed into probably at least a top of a second tier defensive lineman. Thank you. Yes. Well, his dad was a very good defensive,
yes,
lineman when he wasn't playing fullback, I bet, right? I mean, that's
probably would have
Hayward.
Been.
Cameron Hayward has he's blossomed, though. And both of those,
yeah,
guys, Tuitt and Hayward, their narrative on them was, hey, a first-round bust. They haven't really developed. That was four years ago. Now they're elite linemen. Then they've got Shazier at linebacker. Vince Williams has played very fast. And now they've got two edge rushers, which they haven't had before. Bud Dupree and then TJ Watt, who's exploded right away. And then if that's not enough, your guy, Artie Burns,
mm-hmm,
at left or at right corner for them has improved gradually. And then Joe Hayden's been phenomenal this season. So, I mean, they're good at every spot on that defense. That might be the NFL's best defense when you think about it.
This is good. And look, if you're a Steelers fan, you're excited because of this defensive line. I mean, it's like the old, you know, when they had Casey Hampton and Brett Keisel and Aaron Smith
and
up
Aaron
there.
Aaron Smith,
and they were dominant.
They were dominant. You're right. It's a great point. And I feel like they do a little bit more one-gapping stuff than they did. Those guys were great two-gap players.
Yeah.
That was a true 3-4. And we see that a little bit. I forget who. I want to say the Jacksonville game, I think it was. Pittsburgh played a true 3-4 on almost every snap. But a lot of times this year they're playing 4-3. And these guys are getting to be penetrators at times. But it starts up front. You're absolutely right. And you can be more consistent, I think, as a defense when you win in the trenches each week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, the biggest question with the Steelers remains Ben Roethlisberger, and he's been, you know, he's better against the Chiefs. He caught a break. He also, you know, caught a bad break on interception, and today he was fine. I mean, it was more of a, game manager type of thing. They were protecting a lead and ended up being, what, 38 touches here for Le'Veon Bell, 35 on the ground.
Wow, was it that many? Wow.
Yeah.
That's...
it was just again and again. And, I mean, look, we don't need to go into why Le'Veon Bell is good at football. It's just the number of times where he's bottled up and it's like, well, that's going to be a one-yard run. That's going to be a one-yard loss. And he just sort of twists out and falls forward, and all of a sudden it's a four-yard gain. I mean, the guy's, he's unreal.
Oh, I was down at their training camp 2 years ago in La Trobe. It was the nighttime practice that they do, one or two towns over from La Trobe, and I was right on the sideline, and Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams were just doing jogs, running sprints. And I had lately decided I was getting into running a little bit, and I watched Bell and thought, like, I thought so low of myself because of how fluid Bell. I thought, look at this guy. I'm never going to be that. I'm never going to be close to that. And then I stopped and thought, yeah, of course you're not going to be that. That might be the best runner in the entire world of all human beings right now. I mean, he is a natural runner. He is so smooth and fluid. It's effortless with him. And don't ever watch him if you're trying to get in shape, because you're just going to abandon all your plans in a hurry.
I just like to think that you thought you were going to be an NFL running back at that point. And that sort of
I thought that till I was about 14, and that's when I started taking up the writing side of things. It was much easier, much safer too. Didn't get tackled.
It is better, better longevity. But yeah, this is a really good Steelers team. I mean, Steelers and Patriots, I think, are your sort of your clear cut top two. No offense to the Chiefs, but when those teams are playing like they did today. I don't know. I feel like that's it's not even really that much of a debate. I think they're top two by a pretty significant margin.
And one last note on Big Ben before we go to topic three. And I know you were not suggesting this, Gary, but we'll have some listeners and some people that are going to assume this based on kind of the flow of the conversation with Roethlisberger lately. He's not, he maybe isn't what he was as a play extender a few years ago. I mean, he's lost a little bit there, but he's by no means washed up. And that throw he had to Antonio Brown, that beat cover two, I believe it was second and long, I want to say. It was an outside cover two beating throw, far hash type of arm strength stuff. Yeah, you know the one. I mean, that right there tells the story.
Unreal.
If you can still make, it was. If you can make that throw, you can still play at the highest level of quarterback in the NFL. So Roethlisberger declining slightly, nothing to be alarmed about.
Absolutely not.
Number three.
Packers Saints. This was the first start for Brett Hundley. It didn't go well. So, you know, I wrote in my preview column on Sunday that I had done my Andy Benoit impression. And, you know, I gave sort of my take on Brett Hundley's performance against the Vikings, which, you know, you had to take it with a huge grain of salt. He's coming off the bench on the road against one of the best defenses in football. Game plan that wasn't tailored for him, and not to mention he's, you know, replacing Aaron Rodgers. I thought he was fine. I thought he was sort of a you know, he didn't look panicked. He didn't look overwhelmed. It was a little
This is the Minnesota game?
You're talking the Minnesota game last week? They played single high, and you know, he made a couple of throws, and he was baffled by everything Harrison Smith did. But other than that, I didn't think he was completely overwhelmed.
And then, is there a butts or somewhere a part two to this?
Well, part two would have been this game.
Yeah.
This didn't go very well.
It felt like they hit him, didn't it? Like they didn't want to quite feed. I mean, 12 of 25 for 87 yards, pass of 14.
This is the only thing I could think as I was watching the game, because I kept on getting more and more bummed once it was clear. Because it's almost like it got to the midway through the third quarter, and it was like, well, the only way they're going to win this game is if they shut down Drew Brees for the last, you know, whatever it would be, 34 minutes of this game, which wasn't going to happen. But I feel like it was almost like they got the lead and they just pulled it all back so much, and they were so nervous about him making a mistake. And it seemed like a lot of what they did was just vertical routes and tried to sort of open up the field so that he could use his legs and scramble and move the ball that way. And once they fell behind, you know, you couldn't flip the switch and you know, go back to, okay, well, now we want you to start making some throws, making some plays here. It was too late at that point.
And if you had said before the game that they're going to get two interceptions on Drew Brees and they're going to have Aaron Jones is going to rush 17 times for 131 yards, it's extremely disheartening to learn that that's a game they're going to lose and lose, I don't want to say convincingly, but pretty thoroughly in the big picture of things. You know, that's troubling because a lot of things went well for Green Bay in this one, and it didn't matter.
It did not. What did you think of Hundley last week?
I like the skill set, but he was wide-eyed, and he had no timing at all going through his progressions, which is to be expected. I mean, guy's coming off the bench. He hasn't played in the NFL before. New Orleans is not an easy defense to just step in and play against. I know they haven't been the best defense over the years, but if you watched them lately, what stands out, they do a lot of stuff, and that's been a Dennis Allen trademark. They disguise it, and they're getting more comfortable with it because they look fast on film now. That's a fast unit. They're playing fast. They've got some corners. Lattimore's a top corner already, and he's becoming one of the best all-around cover guys, which is only going to let him play faster because now Allen can be more aggressive with everyone else. That's a hard defense to play against because that's a hard defense to prepare for if you've never been in the NFL before. Hundley probably had a lot in his mind going into this game, a tough place to be.
It just, you know, it got to a point where he was trying to hang in the pocket, but, I mean, he would not pull the trigger on anything. And you know, you can't really, I can't say for sure what was going on down there because I haven't seen the coach's film yet. But it was just, you know, it was he would hang in, hold the ball, and then just, you know, look to escape, and after a while that didn't work anymore.
It's the Aaron Rodgers approach, just doesn't have the same ending on each play.
Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know. I mean, they got 2 weeks to set this up. I was hoping they'd come out with something a little more creative. I'm not gonna say Mike McCarthy did not prepare for this game correctly, because he certainly knows how to prepare for it better than I do. But I was hoping for something a little bit different than what they've done in the past, and it, for the most part, looked the same. I can only remember one sort of read option look that they showed, and yeah, they had clearly encouraged Hundley to use his legs, as sort of a, third or fourth option in the passing game. But, you know, there was nothing that was unexpected, I would say, out of the Packers today.
Well, keep in mind, the other guys have to practice and be ready for that too. I mean, Hundley can run around, but they haven't been installing quarterback running type of plays before, so everybody else, it's brand new for them as well. It's hard to do midseason.
Exactly. And, I made the point that, you know, you've seen the Texans do it with Watson, but, you know, when they drafted Watson, Watson was going to be their starter someday soon, probably. And you know, the Packers were hoping they would never have to play Brett Hundley at any point because Aaron Rodgers would play every game for the next 15 years. But that's where they are now.
Number four.
And we are at topic number four. That is the Chargers and the Broncos. If you really want to talk about depressing quarterback play right now, that would be Trevor Siemian. I mean, this Broncos offense is just completely falling apart here. It looks like all the same problems they had a year ago. They can't get the run going, and people are daring Siemian to throw the ball at this point. Chargers were geared up to stop the run. They did. Siemian had to make plays, and he did not for a second straight week and had two more turnovers.
Siemian is very much a structured QB. He's an ultimate puzzle piece. He has to be a part of a team that's doing more around him. And if you get him out of that, Los Angeles, they were up early in this game, or they were up for a good part of the game, up by multiple scores. It's a different type of flow for Siemian, a different type of game to have to compete in. But Broncos have lost 3 out of 4 now, and Simeon's looked very bad, at least in 2 of those losses, counting this one. I thought he looked very bad in the Buffalo game back in week 3. Mm-hmm. Didn't look great last week against the Giants either. You're right. He is highly dependent on a running game. If they don't have it, they're not going to function consistently on offense.
Yep, and they're sitting at 3-3 right now. The Chargers moved up to 3-4. They got their third straight win, so good on Anthony Lynn and company. It looks like, you know, their problem earlier this season, they seem to have a lot of communication problems with in the defensive secondary, and it seems like they've gotten that cleaned up. And, you know, with the two edge guys they have, I mean, this is a very good defense, and you have Phillip Rivers, you have Melvin Gordon, you have a very good offense. This might just be a good team.
It should be. They have the talent, and they have the talent in the right spots. They can play at cornerback with Hayward, and Trevor Williams has been fine filling in for the injured Jason Verrett. But you mentioned those edge guys. That's the best edge rushing tandem in the NFL, in my opinion. Bosa and Ingram, because of the way you can scheme with them. You can move them around and play them on the same side of the formation. They can both play defensive tackle. They're great in confined areas. You can do a lot with them. And we're not talking about stuff that changes the rest of your scheme. Those are just your defensive line alignments. So they can dictate with those guys on defense. And they have a field general type quarterback too. Phillip Rivers, I've started to waver on him a little bit because of all the close losses and turnovers, and at what point do we start blaming the quarterback for at least a little bit of it, even if it is continuously apparently someone else's fault? And I'm not saying he says that. It just, you know, the wide receiver communication issues you've talked about. But that, you know, let's not forget Phillip Rivers' big picture either. He is highly respected around the NFL for the right reasons, and you can give him your full offense and let him run the game at the line of scrimmage. And he did that a little bit today. He's got to do that a little bit every week.
Yep, absolutely. Two sacks for Bosa today, by the way. So he's up to 7.5 on the season, and that's probably where he's going to be for the most part, about a sack a game. Andy, before we move on, quick message here from our friends at ZipRecruiter. Are you in need of great talent for your business but short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click, so you can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/things.
Number 5.
All right, Andy, back at it. Topic number 5. Cardinals and Rams in London, and this was awful for the Cardinals. Carson Palmer breaks his left arm. He's going to be out for 8 weeks, and I don't know. I mean, the Cardinals are kind of hanging by a thread regardless, and I think we all sort of got rejuvenated by that Adrian Peterson game, but the Rams knew Adrian Peterson was coming, unlike the Bucks a week ago. And on top of that, this team losing Palmer, I mean, Drew Stanton under center, it's just not gonna happen this year.
It's heartbreaking, because if they'd won this game, they would have been 4-3 and atop the NFC West. Right there with the Rams would have been 4-3, Seattle would have been 4-2. Mm-hmm. And the story is the Cardinals are back, because they did look back against the Bucks.
Yeah.
And their offensive line got healthier. Palmer's been tough in the pocket this year. We know that their downfield passing designs work when you give Palmer time and he's playing in rhythm and structure. Well, obviously all of that's thrown out the window now because he's not playing at all. And it's too bad, because the other part is this team has a very good defense. And I was starting to think, watching their film the last few weeks, hey, you know what? They're quietly going to turn this around and have a chance to be a 10-6 type of team, and a team no one's going to want to see in the playoffs. I mean, I could see them having that kind of season. And now I'm, you know, that's you can't be optimistic now. They look like 6-10s on the horizon, and the conversation shifts to how real are the Rams at 5-2, tied for the second best record in the NFC behind Philadelphia's 5-1.
Yeah, and to be clear, this, you know, the Palmer injury came at a time when this game was pretty much being controlled by the Rams at that point. What it was, he got picked off. That was midway through the second quarter, and then the Rams scored right off that to stretch the lead to 13-0, and ends up being a 33-0 final. I mean, you know, we wondered early in the, you know, the preseason and going back to last season, what is Todd Gurley? And Todd Gurley had a couple of runs where he just created big time yards, threw a couple of huge stiff arms in this game. I mean, it looks like he's all the way back. Goff is still a little bit up and down, but, you know, he's good enough that they're going to keep winning games.
Yeah, no, he's a young quarterback, and they're asking him to do not a lot, but they're asking him to be a professional quarterback, make multiple reads at multiple levels of the field, and trust the play designs, because those play designs work. That's a really well-coached team. And Goff, when you can get him comfortable and in rhythm, he can be very effective. Now, we've kind of had this conversation with Dak Prescott over the years about Dak Prescott, is that you're not going to be comfortable and in rhythm all the time. And in the NFL, why are we trumpeting Tom Brady right now? Because he's so good at creating pocket space for himself, moving within the pocket. That's an area of Goff's game that's a work in progress still. That should come with experience. If it doesn't, they're going to have an issue at quarterback. But for right now, they're doing enough with Gurley, who's an excellent north and south runner, can make adjustments when he's running in those directions downhill. They're getting him downhill with inside zone runs, a little bit of stretch zone runs as well, where you plant one, you know, one plant and go, as we've heard about the Denver Broncos type of running game. They're doing all of that. All of that keeps the game in the offense's control. Goff is throwing on first down, throwing on second down. They're avoiding the third and long type scenarios. And by the way, Gary, though, when they have gotten to third and long, Goff's been, he's made some gutsy throws as well. He's willing to play up to the moment, and he's willing to do what the situation demands. You don't see him cower in the pocket a lot. He just has some bad habits in the pocket that I think need to be outgrown. I'm optimistic they will be. I am really bullish on the Rams, as you know.
What do you think of them defensively? Because a couple weeks ago, you know, they had a something of a shootout in San Francisco, that Thursday night game. Not that you can put too much weight into that, those short turnaround games. And then they gave up 30 in Dallas. But they've been pretty solid since then. And I think they sort of profiled as a quality defense, talent-wise, coming into the year. And they were making that transition to Wade Phillips. How are they sizing up at this point in your mind, Andy?
Yeah, when they play well, they play fast. They don't always play fast, but when they're comfortable, they play really fast. And I think it starts with those linebackers, Alec Ogletree and Mark Barron. What you have with them, besides a couple of really good chase and pursue type of guys, they're good between the tackles, releasing double teams, and hitting it downhill when they see one of their defensive linemen take a double team. That's when you know to attack as a linebacker. I think they've both improved in that area. They can cover, and the Rams have a lot of guys that can cover the miscellaneous positions, tight ends, running backs, H-backs, all the flexible positions that the Kyle Shanahan type guys of the world, they create mismatches with. And as the season's gone on, and my guess is if they played that Niners team this week, it would not be a shootout the same way, because as the season's gone on, these linebackers and their safeties, John Johnson, I don't know exactly how he played today, but I've liked him for the most part the last couple weeks. These guys are getting better in coverage, and you can do a lot more that way when you're able to cover at those spots. And they're diverse. It's not just Barron. You take the running back, Ogletree, you have the tight end. Hope it works, guys. It's Barron. You have the running back here, but you might have the tight end over there because we're going to move Ogletree here. We're going to do a lot. They do a lot of little bit of wrinkles here and there within the context of their scheme.
Number six.
Topic number six, Andy. Panthers and Bears. The Bears do not need to throw the ball anymore. They're just going to win games with the run game and with defense, apparently.
It's a fun one to watch. I enjoyed seeing, and Eddie Jackson, I mean, has there ever been a guy who's more of a lock for defensive player of the week, even though I don't think he was the best defensive player in this game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're going to get – he's got to get defensive player of the week for two touchdowns. I believe it was long touchdowns.
I was going to say, I believe I saw he was the first defensive player to score two touchdowns of 75 yards or more in the same game. So, that's – I should have looked these things up before we did the show, Andy. But I believe this was also the one-year anniversary of his broken leg last year at Alabama, which
– It was.
I don't think he was – he wasn't a first-round – prospect, but it sort of made him from a day two guy into, I think he went fourth round.
He has played well. Amos has played well at safety, and that was the position of concern with this team.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy who's playing well, and there's two guys I want to talk about actually with this, and we have to talk Bears defense because their offense,
yeah,
you know, they don't have wide receivers and they're trying to play a quarterback who's brand new to the league,
and they were
good
barely
on the
out
move
there today.
Well, yeah, 37 snaps. And I had my guy Ryan Lacy, one of my researchers, found this for me. I believe, what was it? There's been 24 games in the NFL since the merger where a team has had 37 snaps or less. And the Bears are just the third team to win in those games. Everybody else has lost, which mm-hmm. is to be expected. I mean, they didn't have to be out there on the field. But they can't play a traditional passing game with those guys. So it has to be about their running game, which carried them a week ago, and then their defense making plays, which was not the case a year ago.
Yeah.
It's a zone-based defense that plays two safeties back. You need to be creating turnovers when you play that way. They didn't in 2016. They have so far. They're scoring off the turnovers. The guys I want to talk about, though, Gary, one is Kyle Fuller at cornerback, who looks like he did as his rookie. Remember how good he was as a rookie mm-hmm. in 2014? Mostly played on the right side that year. He's now playing on the left side with Amu Kamara, who's a full-time right side corner in the lineup. Fuller's been sensational the last few weeks. And then the other guy is Akeem Hicks, who to me is a top five defensive player right now in the league. He's played at that level. There might be guys who are better than him, but there have not been more than three or four who have played better than him this year.
Yeah. I mean, Leonard Floyd, my favorite guy. I mean, this is a really good defense. And like you said, you know, last year it just felt like it was a fluky thing that they didn't get the turnovers. They had a pass rush. They maybe didn't have great playmakers in the secondary, but generally if you have a pass rush, you can create some turnovers. And they just didn't come last year.
And now they are, and I think it gets back to that secondary. Eddie Jackson, you know, turnovers are hard to analyze a little bit because they feel lucky at times. Like Jackson's, you know, scooping the ball up because Curtis Samuel fumbles on that speed option. Do we credit the defense for playmaking there? Or Jackson, his interception was off of a tip, which was a great play by Prince Amuka Mara defending a Kelvin Benjamin slant. Not easy to do. You know, Jackson had great range to get over and catch the ball and run it back. Some of these are just opportunism showing up at the right time. So it's hard to guess and analyze what it all means. But there are some teams, a great defense, as Gary, always found a way to do it again and again. Remember those Bears in the Urlacher era? And remember Ed Reed? I put on Ed Reed's film once at NFL Films. I said, let's watch interceptions and study interceptions. And Greg Cosell, who was tutoring me at the time in there, he said, well, I mean, we can if you want, but you're not going to learn anything. We put it on, and you don't learn a whole lot. There's just there's an X factor with these turnovers. It's not like, oh, Ed Reed gets the ball because he starts out here and disguises and does this and tricks him into that. It doesn't always go that way. Some of it's just some guys know how to find the football. And lately, Amos and Eddie Jackson, they've been finding the football.
Other side of the ball for the Panthers, no Kuechly on defense, obviously, though it didn't make a difference today. They only gave up 3 points defensively, but is this one just one of those weeks for this offense? I mean, they were out there for a long time, and it seemed like it was a lot of Cam throwing because they were suddenly playing from behind in a game where they were, you know, they weren't giving up any points on the other side of the ball.
I wouldn't worry too much about it. If you take away those turnovers, they probably win this game. And the reason the Bears only had 37 snaps on offense is because Carolina's turnovers came at the end of long drives. So Carolina went 8 or 9 plays and then turned it over near their own red zone, near Chicago's red zone area. That's why Jackson's returns were 75 yards plus. I think it's one of those games. Does Carolina have stuff to clean up? Yes, and they're always going to, because their quarterback's not a precision accuracy guy. So there will be some wild throws every game. There's going to be a missed opportunity or two. They have to live with that. Today, they didn't. It cost them at times. But Newton's also going to make a lot of plays, and the type of plays that you can't easily draw up or defend. And I think he's been doing that. He's run the ball very well. Their running game got back on track a little bit in about the second or third quarter in this one. Then you're right, they had to play from behind. It's not a great offense, but it's nothing to panic about now. I'll tell you, the offense has been better than I would have guessed it'd be.
Number 7.
Let's go on to topic number 7 then. This was the Jets getting out to a lead, can't hang on in Miami. The Dolphins lose Jay Cutler. Sounds like he's going to be out for a couple of weeks. Matt Moore comes off the bench. They were down 2 touchdowns at one point in the second half, and Matt Moore rallies them, leads them back, and the Dolphins get out of here with another improbable win. This one was in regulation. They ended up getting a late turnover that set up the game-winning field goal. This was another game that Adam Gase probably shouldn't have won, but Adam Gase's team found a way to win.
I would love to know what Gase is thinking and feeling right now. And he's a guy, he'll tell you if you ask him. I mean, if you get him in an honest moment, he will tell you. And I would love to get him in an honest moment, because his offense is not playing very well.
No.
And that offense that hasn't played well, it's been the passing game. The pass protection's been bad. The chemistry at the receivers and quarterback has not been there. And yet, in the last 2 weeks, they've come from behind to win in the second half and score big points in the second half. And here they sit, an offensive team with an offensive coach and an offense that's playing quite poorly overall, and they're 4-2.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
good defense they have. They have a good defense.
They are good defensively. They also, that field was a mess today. I think that played into the wackiness of this game a little bit. I mean, I guess they're going to be looking at a quarterback controversy if Moore does this. I mean, your book on Moore is he's so up and down.
Yeah, he is up and down, but he can run your offense. And the last time we saw him is that playoff game against the Steelers, and he had some turnovers in it. And I'm sure people say, "Oh, they come home to roost, the backup quarterback. Here come the turnovers." A lot of those were not his fault. And when you go back and look closely and understand the play calls from the firsthand perspective, there are details in that offense, and Matt Moore can run those details. Now, when the details go poorly, he can be susceptible to turnovers, and that's probably the difference between being a starter and being a backup. But that doesn't mean you can't play with him. It means everyone has to operate and execute really well. And, Gary, it's funny you mentioned the messy field, because I know that's something Gase has thought about. He played that game against Arizona last year, and Arizona, I believe, beat him, and it was a really messy field. This was December. Yeah, and it was in Miami. He learned a lot of lessons that game and some things he would do differently if he ever got on a messy field again. And I bet you he had no – I bet he didn't mind at all that the field was messy in this game.
Yeah, I mean, this was one – when they won in Atlanta last week, their offensive line got going and the run game got going, and the run game never got going in this one. Moore ends up leading them to 17 points in the fourth quarter. He ends up throwing for 188 and had an interception in there, but ended up throwing for 188 in less than a half of football. So, we'll see what the Dolphins do going forward. They are, if nothing else, they are interesting. They are a fascinating 4-2 team and sort of the poster boy for parody at this point, I guess.
Number 8.
Let's stay in the AFC East. This is the Bills win again. This one at home against the Bucks. They hang on. I guess we'll sort of talk about the Bills here. They were a little more mistake-prone in this one than they have been. Both teams are a little bit sloppy. But, I don't know. They had to move the ball late. They had blown a lead. They had to move it late. And they had enough. And they bring Deontay Thompson in off the street. and all of a sudden they get a couple of big plays from him. He ended up going 4 for 107 in a game where I wasn't sure how much he'd actually see the field. And just a lot of LeSean McCoy other than that, and it was enough to put up 30 points and get a win.
Good win. Good win. How about what's up with Tampa Bay? I mean, they don't have any kind of pass rush at all right
they
now.
Do not.
And if you don't have a pass rush, you can't play the defense. It's a simple zone defense, very simple. And you can't play it if you don't have a pass rush. End of story. They're a 2-4 team. A large part of it's because they can't rush the quarterback.
I'm begging them to sign Dwight Freeney. They have cap space. They have money. Go get Dwight
they
Freeney.
They should. So, Dwight Freeney can still play. Dwight Freeney last year when he was on the
field. I can't believe he's still out.
I can't either. You wonder if he's holding out for something, like if he's wanting the right opportunity. But when he was on the field for Atlanta last year, he was as good as anybody in the league for the snaps that he played. You know, he couldn't play as many, but that's who cares? I mean, he plays the important ones. He plays the obvious passing situations. Somebody needs to go sign Dwight Freeney.
Talking about this defense real quick, there were some complaints after the game. TJ Ward and I guess Chris Baker through social media channels kind of echoed this. But TJ Ward is upset that he's being rotated off the field in a lot of situations. I mean, I don't know. Is this a legitimate beef, Andy? I was still shocked that Ward got let go by Denver and thought it was a pretty nice coup for the Bucks to come in and scoop him up and you know, their defense just isn't really working out right now.
Yeah, I was kind of with you on that. On the Denver side, to give some credit, Will Parks has been very good and Justin Simmons has played well. That defense has not missed TJ Ward. And that's saying something about those guys because Ward is still, at least as of a year ago, he was a high-level player. I'm surprised he's not getting more snaps. I know they're getting their second-round rookie Justin Evans involved. It looks like they want him to be their free safety. That means there's a spot at strong safety, and that's where Ward plays. He's always been very good. He covers tight ends. He goes down in the box. I've never been a big Chris Conte guy. Chris Conte's one of those guys that always seems to find his way into the lineup somehow, and I don't know how he does it because he's not a great tackler. He's not necessarily a playmaker, and I'm not trying to rip on him. I mean, I'm really not, but I don't understand. They know their guys better than I do. They know them way better than I do. I am shocked that Chris Conte plays ahead of TJ Ward in certain scenarios. And by that, I mean any scenarios.
Yeah. Well, TJ Ward is making some noise. The Bucks are 2-4, which is, I mean, that I think that make they're what, the fourth worst record in football right now. So things are not going as planned.
What did Baker say? What did Chris Baker say?
Baker, I'm trying to bring it up. I think I closed the window here. You know, it was just one of those like Me Too type of tweets.
Yeah, well, you know, Baker's part of that pass rush that hasn't shown up. And the reason he got a big free agent contract from Tampa Bay is because in Washington, in the second half of his Redskins career, Baker became a very good pass rusher. Never thought he would. He didn't have the body type or the movement type for it. He developed that and earned a lot of money, but now he's getting the money, but he hasn't been earning it the same way because he's part of a pass rush that's underperforming.
Just so we have it straight here, SportsCenter had tweeted, Buccaneer safety TJ Ward is frustrated by his lack of playing time, and then they have a a link to that. Chris Baker quote tweeted that, facts, all caps, and then I feel the same way, bro. So facts, I feel the same way, bro.
What's the facts part? I hate how people use the word facts on Twitter. What are the facts of that? What's the fact?
Know. I'm too old for that. I don't know.
Yeah, feel the same way, bro. And he quote tweeted it too, which I guess my researchers helped me with my Twitter etiquette. I guess quote tweeting is pretty aggressive. You're supposed to reply to be a little gentler. Is that how that works?
Well, I think if you're quoting an outlet, I feel like quote tweeting is like if you quoted something and I thought it was dumb. And I wanted to like broadcast what you tweeted and also be like, you know, add my snarky comment. I would quote tweet it. If I was just kind of like, Andy, I disagree with you and wanted to be a little more polite about it, I'd just reply. I think, but
so
I don't know.
Why don't people quote tweet everything? Because if you reply, how do people, don't they wonder what you're replying to?
Yeah,
like,
but
let them know why you're
it.
Saying what you're saying. You're assuming everyone's here. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to embarrass
myself. But you can't see
a
reply. You can't see a reply unless you are following both people. I believe is what it does.
Yeah.
And I think Twitter also likes that, because if you click on someone's reply and are wondering what they're replying to, that, like, that's another impression for Twitter. So then they can go to advertisers and say, look at all these impressions. Look at this engagement we're getting from all these, you know, whatever brands and media people that overwhelm that whole operation.
Well, I'm sure Dirt Cutter loves Twitter today, right now, what we're talking about here.
One last thing for this game. I got to mention it because it was literally, this was the worst case of clock management I have ever seen. And I actually, like, I had to rewind it like four times to try and figure out what exactly happened here. The Bills had the end of the first half, 12 seconds, no timeouts, balls at the Tampa 18. They run a play. They throw it to the flat to Jordan Matthews, who is, he's not like, you know, it's not like one of those things where, like, oh, he's reaching for the sideline. He's just not quite there. I know they wanted to get him to the sideline, but he was about 12 yards away from the sideline when he got tackled, and the clock just ran out. They were trying to turn, like, a 35-yard field goal into a 33-yard field goal and ended up leaving three points on the field. I've never seen anything like that. I just wanted to point out how absurd that was. Sean McDermott's did a tremendous job of the scene. They showed Sean McDermott, like, you know, as everyone's showing off for halftime. He's sort of like, he's just sort of yelling at someone. And I think it was the officials, but I really like the way the shot was framed. You just couldn't tell who he was yelling at, because I don't know who you'd yell at that situation. He was just yelling
just
at the
yelling
world at that point.
Guy on the street. Yeah, guy on the street yelling. You know, the Buccaneers, it's funny because they spend more, I bet you they spend more time and effort studying clock management than any team in the league. Cutter really is humble about that. He'll take any advice he can get from anyone because he knows there's a lot that goes into it. Here he is sitting on the other sideline. He can probably say, oh, we'd never do that at least.
It was, I'm kind of glad, look, I have a soft spot for the Bills, and I'm kind of glad they won this game, because if that was the difference, I don't know. I don't know how you sleep at night after that one. They just, I don't know what the thinking was. We got to get
there
three
been a
more
few
yards.
Teams.
We can't hit a 36-yarder, but we know Hauschka's good from 33, and Hauschka's been hitting like 50-plus yarders all year.
Yeah. There's been a few cases of that this year, and it's been mostly the defenses botching. I remember the Browns against the Jets, and it actually wound up being the difference in the game scoring-wise.
Yeah.
But they had a really bad defensive call by Greg Williams at the end of the half, blitzing with just seconds to go. That basically gave the Jets the free 5 yards along the sideline and gave them a field goal. There's been a lot of bad play calling at the end of halves to try to get like four extra yards here and there on field goals, which I'm always a fan of, but I like it when the play calling is good there. That's why I don't have to play and coach. I like to do my job.
Exactly. No, but it's all good if it's like a 59-yarder, try and turn into a 54-yarder or something like that, but it's like, it was already less than an extra point. Just go. Just kick it.
Number nine.
The lightning round is
round.
Here. And we're starting with the Titans and the Browns. I know Titans fans will be upset with this one. The only thing I'll say is Mariota's still not 100%. Still no Corey Davis, obviously. Short week going on the road in the NFL. It is not easy, no matter who the opponent might be. And the Titans come away with a win. Not a beautiful win, but an overtime win. All field goals. All sorts of kicking in this game. Suck up ends up 55 straight now from inside 50, so good on them. The Browns, as if it could get any worse, they lose Joe Thomas. The consecutive snaps streak is over.
Too bad, and I wonder what they'll do there. Sean Coleman at right tackle, it's been a little bit up and down, but I love his ups. And as long arms, a good firm base. I have really been intrigued by him. If Thomas misses extended time, I wonder if they'll move Sean Coleman over to right tackle. They're gonna have to figure something out.
Yeah, no, that was the book on Coleman coming out of Auburn. You know, big time talent, and just a question of whether he was gonna be Greg Robinson type, or whether it would sort of all come together for him. Seahawks Giants. This one went a little more how you'd expect it to go for the Giants. They just really couldn't get it going offensively, with the exception of Evan Engram. And it's kind of a bummer watching how good Evan Engram has been, and just thinking like, wow, what if they had other wide receivers on this team that could really make them a diverse and interesting offense. But instead, it's just whenever they can get Engram in any sort of space and he makes a play, and that's all they get.
Just one of those years for the Giants. And they did, for a little while, they did have those guys, and Engram hadn't developed yet. And I think his development has been accelerated by the absence of those guys. Maybe 2018 will be their year for the Giants there.
Yep, and the Seahawks just sort of ran him into the ground in this one a little bit, sort of overwhelmed them defensively, ended up being 425 yards of offense for the Seahawks as well. Jimmy Graham had a couple of bad drops, so they overcome all that, and the game was closer than 24-7 suggests, but still a fairly comfortable road win for the Seahawks, should say. Cowboys 40.
Doug Baldwin, by the way, remember, Doug Baldwin had a blow-up. He took accountability for it, but another one of those Seahawks sideline dust-ups. Pete Carroll, they lead the league in no big deal sideline blow-ups, don't they? Pete Carroll, it's never a big deal. Everything's fine. Cooler heads prevail. And I think he's right. This team just, they're like the happy couple that can scream at each other all day long.
Yeah, and I guess I should mention, so it was Tom Cable. And I don't know about you, but every time I think of Tom Cable, it's the old, when he was the Raiders head coach, and he, was it Randy Hansen? One of his assistants
supposedly
broke his jaw in a fight.
It was
Baldwin gave Cable a little shove, and Cable seemed to kind of take it in stride. And whatever, you're watching from afar and reading lips, but it looked like he was just kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it all sort of was very calm. Like, I feel like it's the kind of thing where if the camera didn't happen to catch it, I don't know if anyone would be talking about it.
Well, Seattle, baby. What do we got? Niners, Cowboys, you were getting to before I cut you off
Niners,
there with the salacious
Niners,
stuff.
Cowboys. This was, I don't know, it was nice of the Niners to just sort of give their fans a break, not have to sit through another heartbreaking 2 or 3 point loss. And also
us,
Kyle Shanahan showing some unity with his old Falcons mates. Everyone's sort of a dud today involved in that Super Bowl 51 loss. But
giving our film study guys a break, too, because I'm not going to have to watch every snap of this, which is good because I can't stand the coach's film angle at San Francisco. It's too high. It's
at
too
Levi's?
On top of things. Yeah, it's
oh,
too.
It,
there's
like
something about the angle where I don't see the players very well on that. I remember the Panthers-Broncos Super Bowl film was like my worst film study of the year that year. I will be able to turn this one off. Let's see. When was this one over? Halftime? A little after halftime, probably?
Yeah.
Looking at the
Not even.
Now.
I mean, it was 20-3 early in the second quarter.
Yeah. Cowboys went up 33-3 late in the third. That's probably when I'll be done watching this the film on this one. Good.
Andy,
I'll save it for the end of the week. It'll be the treat on Friday.
I'll just say you should watch the special teams in this one. I don't know if you know
what Dallas said. That's going to be that's going to take longer than just doing the regular film, given all the points Dallas had.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What do we got? Ravens, Vikings. I'm hosting the show. Ravens,
yes.
Vikings, lightning round. The only two teams in the league that were purple, by the way.
Hell yeah. All right.
Yep.
That is a good fact. Ravens are out of receivers. I mean, we said the Bears had receivers. Ravens had receivers now. They lost Mike Wallace early in this one. He was playing injured anyway. No Jeremy Maclin. They can't run the ball. They can't block. So they have some, added up. Those are some issues there. The Vikings are very good defensively. And Latavius Murray, actually, 113 yards. I never thought we'd see Latavius Murray have a game like that in Minnesota, but...
Well, Brandon Williams is back for the Ravens, and their run defense, they were giving up 169 yards a game without him.
Yeah.
And to see Latavius Murray get 113 just on his own with Williams back in the lineup, that is unsettling for Baltimore.
That is.
They have a lot of unsettling things there. The other thing, as you mentioned, their receivers. Where is Breshad Perriman? Where has he been this season?
Yeah. I don't know. not really making an impact in any way.
Right. Well, and in this one, he was out. So that, I mean, we can actually ask, where was he? But when he's been on the field and healthy, where has he been? I didn't want to be snide, but when you said, well, they're out of receivers, part of me thought, what's the difference? Those receivers aren't doing anything anyway.
Yeah. No, it's very fair. And look, Perriman, when you miss on a first rounder, it becomes a problem. And when you miss on a first rounder and he's hurt, and then the two free agents you brought in get hurt, and I mean, it was all Chris Moore today. Chris Moore was basically their number one. So Griff Whalen had four catches. That's where you're at with the Baltimore Ravens. Last game of the day. Well, not last one played, but they played this afternoon. Jaguars and Colts. This was not a competitive game at any point. The Colts, they lost Rashawn Melvin early on to a concussion. They ended up losing Malik Hooker, the safety for the season, with a knee injury. Yeah, and this was the Jaguars. It was a Jaguars game. They got out to a lead, and then they just dominated defensively and leaned on the run game. 37 rushing attempts. Bortles, when he had to throw, was plenty efficient. That's how they win.
My guy TJ Yeldon finally got active.
Yeah.
My favorite running back over the last few years has been inactive because of Fournette and Ivory taking the roster spots. Fournette was out this game. Yeldon, 9 carries, 122, had the long one of 58 there.
He got his 100 yards.
The Jags got 10 sacks today. Second time this year they've done that. Calais Campbell already has 10-plus sacks on the season. So the progress that we've seen from Indy's offensive line, I guess it probably stalled a little bit in this one.
Yeah, and T.Y. Hilton was upset about it and called out the offensive line afterwards. But, I mean, they...
That's fine. I mean, when they're that bad, does that cause any kind of riff at all? I mean, that's saying, like, hey, water's wet, sky is blue. Offensive line gave up 10 sacks. That's horrible.
Yep.
That better not cause a problem. I know you're not supposed to do that. It's against NFL decorum to call out the position groups, especially linemen for some reason. That better not cause any rift at all, because T.Y. Hilton's right and the offensive linemen were wrong.
Yeah,
they
but I guess
horribly.
The point is
you
don't have to call attention to it.
Well, that's probably fair. Maybe. All right, T.Y. Hilton, grow up. Grow up, T.Y.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to call attention to the fact that I just spent 14 minutes talking to you about Jeff Heath kicking. I know it was a mistake, but it happened. Let's move on, Andy.
And it's going to get brought up again, because what round are we in now?
It is. Topic number 10, weekly awards.
Number 10.
Offensive player of the week. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
To move it along, I'm just going to take Brady on this one.
Okay.
Is that lazy? That's lazy. It's lazy. I don't care. I'll take Brady.
A little bit.
Take Brady, and I'll take Le'Veon Bell.
Well, that's even lazier. Now you're just hogging every star player who was awesome today. I'll take Matt Moore for the comeback coming off the bench. I didn't think he could do it behind that offensive line. They were a little bit shaky today, but he got it done. Defensive player of the week. Who you got, Andy?
I'm going to go William Jackson for the Bengals in a losing effort, but it's time for William Jackson. He played right corner today with Adam Jones out injured. That needs to become the permanent move. Jackson is, and it's been evident on tape, I think, every week, he's a better player than Jones at this point in their respective careers. And he had a number of outstanding solo coverage stops or zone coverage stops. A lot of times it's zone there in Cincinnati. He's played extremely well for them, a former recent first-round pick. It's time for him to be a starter.
All right, I'm going Marshawn Lattimore. Something of a lifetime achievement award here. I guess this is his rookie year, so it is his lifetime. But I think the Packers were pretty nervous about going after these cornerbacks in any way, shape, or form. The few times they actually went at Lattimore, he made plays and broke up passes. I don't think he gave up a catch today. And this was a nice outing for the Saints D. Looking pretty good. Special teams player of the week.
He's good in man and zone for Lattimore, which is unusual for a young guy.
Special teams player of the week. Who you got, Andy?
I have Jeff Heath. No need to say anything more. Who do you have?
He's hitting two-thirds of his PATs this year. Pretty good. I'm giving it to Drew Kayser, basically based on one awesome punt. Ended up going from his own 30 and he ended up getting it pinned down at the one, and a lot of it was in the air. It wasn't one of those rollers. So that was a really nice punt. He's the Chargers punter, by the way. And he did I was going to say, I should point that out. And I'm not even sure if I just pronounced his name right. I'm not sure if it's Kaiser or Kaiser. That's very unprofessional of me. But he did the baseball swing, home run swing celebration after it. And it was a nice moment for punters everywhere. Coach of the week, who you got, Andy?
How about Matt Patricia getting that defense on track against a good Atlanta offense? A lot of pressure on Patricia. I'm sure he can handle it fine because the pressure's probably not coming from Belichick. They know what's going on there. But his unit played very well tonight.
I'll give it to Anthony Lynn. Gets the first home win, 3-game winning streak for the Chargers when it looked like that whole operation might collapse. And he's doing it out there in that tiny little stadium in front of two or three people rooting for his team. So nice division win for Anthony Lynn. I think that's
a wrap for us, Andy. That's a show. We got it. Yeah, we figured it
that
out.
That is. Well, thanks to producer Shelby Royston, as well as Lou Pellegrino and editor Chris Basil, everyone at Cadence 13 who helps us out, makes it sound so good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. We really do appreciate you guys devoting your time and to our show and actually spending some time with us. Andy and I do want to hear from you. Contact us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GRambling_SI. We don't know what we're doing on there, but we'll do our best to interact. And we're also on Facebook. You can also email talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and, of course, this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.